hello from Liverpool. We are in Liverpool. I can't believe it. It's amazing to be here. It's very cold, but it is wonderful. And I'm stood in the city centre in front of St. George's Hall, where there is a huge banner that runs right along the front in the colours and the hearts of this year's Eurovision Song Contest, saying United by Music. And on top of the roof flies proudly the Ukrainian flag, the United Kingdom hosting on behalf of Ukraine. I've just been at the Heads of Delegation meeting. That is where nearly all the countries of this year's Eurovision meet for the first time in person in the host city to find out everything they need to know about this year's contest. I have heard about the plans for the semi-finals and the grand finals, but I don't want to spoil the surprise. All I will say is it's good. Actually, it's not good. It's amazing. You are in for such an incredible show. And the reason I'm here is to give you an idea of what it is like to be involved at the very heart of this contest. What is it like to be a head of delegation, to lead your country at Eurovision? What does that involve? And what is it like to put on, quite simply, the greatest show on earth? Coming up, some brilliant stories, some brilliant insight. So let's go inside and see who we can find.
You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast with Steve Holden.
Hello, Martin.
Hi, Steve.
Martin, you have quite an important job, don't you?
Well, we have a great team. I'm the Managing Director of the Eurovision Song Contest 2023 here in the UK, in Liverpool.
What a job. You are here at the Heads of Delegation meeting. What goes on a day like this? Because you've got all your countries in one room.
Yeah, it suddenly comes to life today, actually, because all the heads of delegations from all the 37 acts, delegations as we call them in Eurovision land, are meeting for the first time here in Liverpool, and it's a really packed information day, basically. So we go down to the arena with them all, we show them around there, and then we come back and we take them through a whole raft of different information that they need to know, from security to staging to graphics, you name it, and we rattle through it all. So although it's a long day, it's exciting because it really brings it to life.
This time last year, I bet you never thought that you would be doing this, right? Basically organising the Eurovision Song Contest.
The best thing is that this time last year, no one thought they were going to be doing it. No, I mean, you know, the story is well told, but obviously Ukraine won, and it was absolutely in their gift whether they wanted to say, look, you know, for one reason or another, and very good reasons, we can't do it. So we really found out that we'd been given the honour of hosting it on their behalf in the summer. I didn't start until the beginning of October. It's a fun thing to do in half the time it should take. But I have to say, everyone's being brilliant, everyone's lent in, and I think we're roughly where we should be now.
It's a short amount of time. Thrown in at the deep end might be a good phrase to use, but you have done these big events before. You worked most famously on the Olympics, I would say. You know how to put on a big show.
Yeah, and it's the combination between great television people and great live events people. So you're absolutely right. I'm fortunate enough to know a thing or two about how to put on a big live event. I'm surrounded by a load of people who know how to put on great television programmes, and the important thing was bringing the two together. And like I say, everyone's just lent into it, really. There's a lot of new stuff. You know, I've never done a Eurovision before, so I'm learning tons. We're really lucky that we're surrounded by people who've done Eurovision before, but also hopefully the people who haven't are bringing a fresh eye to things as well. So it's a great combination of team members.
So are you a Eurovision fan?
Oh, honey, yes. This is a dream come true, I have to say. I've often, like many people in the UK, joked that it would be the best gig to do, but we would never, ever do it. So to find myself actually working on Eurovision, I literally do pinch myself every day.
So you've had the Eurovision parties, you've hosted, and you've also been to them, right?
Yes, our big thing used to be Eurovision buffets. It was less about dressing up and more about the food, and reverse engineering any food into what could possibly be described as coming from a country. I remember somebody was doing Iceland once and bought Kirk sausages, which just didn't work on any level. But yes, it's always been about the food at our parties, actually.
What are some of your kind of most memorable Eurovision moments yourself when you've watched it and gone, oh my goodness, wow, that's amazing?
Well, it was Conchita and Rise Like a Phoenix, because it just brought everything for me about Eurovision together. It was an amazing song. It was brilliantly staged. It was a moment, particularly for the LGBTQ community, of recognition and presence. It was just everything, right? And I don't think there are many of us who watched that who will ever forget it.
What do you think Liverpool is going to bring to the Eurovision Song Contest?
Music. I mean, it is the global city of music. It's the UK's music city, and it never has there been such a perfect match between event and city. And so, yes, you know, Eurovision will bring all its stars and all its acts. Liverpool's got a great heritage, but it's got a great current music scene as well. So I just think it will be a cacophony of everything. Well, as we say, united by music.
Two big Martins today at the top of Eurovision.
There's only one Martin, and he is called Martin O. We've had to be demarked. So I'm Martin G, and he's Martin O. There is only one Martin, and it is Mr. Oesterdahl.
There you go. That is Martin Green, the managing director of the Eurovision Song Contest. As I mentioned, he was head of ceremonies for the London Olympics and Paralympics back in 2012. So he knows how to put on a good show. Martin Oesterdahl has been here as well. Of course, it just wouldn't be the same without him, would it? Now, we got given a tour of the arena in Liverpool earlier, where Eurovision's going to be hosted, seeing how everything connects from the location of where the stage is to where the dressing rooms will be. It did feel at times like being on a school tour or a trip, just with 37 different countries. And as I mentioned, every country has their own head of delegation. It's the team leader. It's the person responsible for their nation at the contest. Some heads of delegation, they've been doing it for years. And for others, it's their first time in 2023. So to get an idea of what it is like and to share some of their stories about Eurovision, I'm delighted to say I've taken four of them aside for a little catch up and a gossip about what it is like.
Hi, I'm Mariangela. I'm from Italy. I'm the head of delegation for the Italian delegation.
My name is Felix Bergson, and I come from Iceland. I'm a head of delegation. I've been working on the contest since 2011.
My name is Birgit Simal. I'm from Belgium. I've been head of delegation since 2018, but it's only my third Eurovision, since in Belgium we also have a French broadcaster, and we switch every year, so every other year I'm in charge.
My name is Mario Heximeri from the Albanian Public Broadcaster, and this is my first Eurovision Song Contest, so I'm totally new at this.
How does it feel being your first year, Mario? What's it been like so far, and how much work goes into being a head of delegation?
I mean, the first thing that I can say, for me, being such a small country on such a big stage, it's an absolute privilege, and I'm honored and lucky to be here, and it's a steep learning curve. Unfortunately, Albania has never had a winner, so not yet, but hopefully we'll change that.
Got a whole family on stage this year.
Yeah. So we're already standing out without even performing it, which I think is great. And we had the whole family, Albina and the whole Kelmendi family. And hopefully they will put on a great show for everyone.
Does that mean as head of delegation, you've got to be a family counselor as well, basically?
Yes, it's a new role for me. So the head of delegation role is not just that you need to meet deadlines and make sure the production goes well, but you also need to manage all the family interests, per se.
Yeah, make sure they don't argue.
They never do. They're great.
Oh, that's good. Really great. Harmonious.
Harmonious is the right word, yes.
Coming over to Mariangela, you said earlier you can relax a little bit this year because you were head of delegation in Italy, the host country. What was that like?
Yeah, that's a big challenge because we had Mahmoud and Blanco, and they were well known in the country. So whenever we want to go out of the hotel, there were so many people just at the entrance, and we couldn't even go to the on the bus sometimes. Even for the social program, there were so many people always around us, and it was really tough. But it was still also a privilege to be the head of delegation of such a famous artist in your own country.
So not only were you looking after the act, the performance, but you had two megastars to look after as well.
Yes, exactly. That was, I would say, the hardest part of it, of my job. I mean, to manage those big artists in their own country with that fan clubs. So I would say aggressive, but in a positive way. So it was really interesting to be with them and try to let them be part of the social programs, although it was really difficult.
What time did you get up and what time did you go to bed every day?
So I would start really early in the morning and go to bed really late at night. And I would reply to emails, I remember, at 1, 2 o'clock during the night, and people were hating me because I was sending out those emails at such a late time.
Is that same for all of you? Very little sleep when you're a head of delegation, Birgit. What's it like?
Yes, it's very little sleep. It's a great job to do, but you have to get up early in the morning, and yeah, you're the last to go to sleep because you have to fix everything for the day after and plan schedules, everything. Yeah.
What do you have to look after?
I have to look after the artist and the schedule of all the delegation, that they are at the rehearsals at the right time. But also I get a lot of questions from everywhere, from journalists, from the organization. Yeah, every day you think like, okay, now I've caught up with everything, and then there's like 10 new questions popping up from somewhere. You even can't imagine. It's strange. Things keep coming to you every day.
Felix, what was your first Eurovision?
It was actually in Düsseldorf in 2011, which was an amazing Eurovision there. And I was there as a head of press.
And then you became head of delegation later on.
Well, I mean, it took 6 years because I was then in between. I was a commentator for Iceland. So I really was quite involved with the team throughout all these years. So it really was not that big a step at the end of the day. But, you know, then you have certain problems right at the beginning. You know, we lost our luggage in Kiev. That was the first thing, you know.
So you lost your luggage?
Yeah, I mean, and my luggage, everybody's luggage. I mean, there was no luggage for the whole delegation for 3 or 4 days. So we were there was the whiff of sweat in the air whenever the delegation met, because we were wearing the same clothes basically throughout the first. The artist was very clever. The artist Svala. A brilliant, brilliant one. She took the stage costume with her in hand luggage, so that was there. But it was right away a challenge, something you had to deal with right away. And then you realize this is what the job is about. You have to. It's a very diplomatic job. It's very much a diplomacy. You have to be able to work with everybody to keep everybody in a good way, but at the same time you have to be firm about certain things, and you know, it's about working with people and making people feel comfortable. And it's really like, you know, when you're hosting a big party, to make everybody feel comfortable that you are, and they feel that they are in the right place at the right time, and everything's going in the right direction, and we'll get to the end of the evening together in a very happy, you know, get to a very happy place. And that's the same with this. You're trying taking the group and trying to get the energies into one kind of into one channel, and trying to get everybody to the final place in a good manner.
Which is not always easy, and especially with Iceland, with Hatari in Tel Aviv, and then with Dathi Freyja in 2021. Both, you had challenges with both of them, and it's you that's in charge of this.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, that means that you have to do the diplomacy with the EBU and with the Eurovision. I mean, I think we all had these. I mean, we've had some prima donnas, we've had people who are, you know, who get really nervous and they don't really know. We have had people with a medical situation where they need medical assistance because they are not dealing with the whole pressure of the thing. So there are so many things we have to deal with. This was, these things that you're talking about, especially Hatari, was very public. But every year we have something to deal with. This was just in the eyes of the media. Every year we have something else to deal with, every year.
But what's it like when the country doesn't qualify for the grand final?
Well, at first we were really shocked because we hadn't expected not to go through in Lisbon. But then you have to keep the group together. We decided to stay in Lisbon until the final and go and watch it together. And that was like our close family. We could recover from it together.
You always prepare. We do prepare ourselves for that. So this could happen. You know, we want to go to the final, but this could happen. And then this is what. And then you tell them what's going to happen next. And we do, like Birgit said, we stay on. We try to enjoy the contest. We just stay on like a, you know, like a big family, and you know. But every year is different. I mean, it depends on the energy of the people that you're working with.
Mario, what are you expecting this year for your first year? How do you picture it's going to be?
$1 million question. I hope we win. I'm the kind of head of delegation, and I tell the artists and everyone who's participating that just enjoy it. It's a one in a lifetime opportunity for them, and it's a matter of. I find at least that the more relaxed they are, the better they perform.
So in Turin, when you are in this massive whirlwind in your home country, what was the moment that felt the most surreal or strange for you last year?
Just amazing to see the competition from so many points of view and enjoy and taste it.
Do you think you'll enjoy it more this year?
I think so. I hope so.
More relaxed, probably, yes. It will be more relaxed, yeah. Well, the strangest moment was, of course, probably when my delegation got COVID. That was the weirdest. And also because, you know, I'm an older generation, so I was kind of thinking, how do I deal with this? You know, how do I get the message out to the press and everything? And you know, and 2 minutes later, it was all over the media because they just made their own Instagram video and told everybody.
They did.
You know, it's so brilliant. And it was like, and I realized, okay, they're much better at this than I am. So let's, you know, that's great that they can do it this way. So I think that was a really surreal moment because we had really been taking care. We had been, you know, we were even vaccinated at that time. We were one of the few that actually had vaccination. So we were so sure that we would be fine. And then suddenly we had it, and it was like the worst. Because we really wanted to bring Daði Freyr onto the stage. But we, you know, we are the only nation that has ever competed in the final without being there. You know, you talk about not qualifying. I mean, this was even a bigger sadness. I mean, we were really sad not to be in the room for the final. It was really sad. I mean, we tried to make a party out of it. We kept a brave face. But at the end of the day, I think all of us were very, very sad that this happened.
What's been the funniest or weirdest moment for you at Eurovision?
I think it was in Lisbon. A few months before, there was like a terrorist threat in Belgium. They put two security agents with our delegation, and they followed us everywhere we went. And when we arrived at the airport, one of them told me, I have two main targets, the artist and you. And I was like, me? Why me? Yeah, you're the head of delegation. You're important to the organization. But yeah, strange, but anyway.
You never expected that?
No. And he went with us everywhere, even to when we went to the restaurants, they were there and they checked everything. And then one day I sneaked out of the hotel because I had to go somewhere. And I felt safe, so I just went and I got a phone call and it was this security agent, and he said, Birgit, where are you? So like, I'm walking around in the city, never go anywhere alone without me.
Well, at least you were safe.
I was safe. He's still my Facebook friend though.
It sounds like one of your jobs is thinking fast on your feet and things never really go to schedule.
That's absolutely correct. And I was thinking about funny episodes that, for instance, in Turin last year, as we had Mahmoud De Blanco, very famous, we had the security in front of our hotel all the time. And I don't know, Bobby, I have a clue, but we did the fans. They knew exactly where we were supposed to go away and then to come back. And for after the grand final, Blanco was very popular as well as Mahmoud. And we had all these kids and all these people just out of the hotel. We were coming back from the venue to the hotel. It was very late at night. And Blanco had this very nice outfit. And his trousers just broke down, and he pulled them out. And so he was in his underwear.
He was in his underwear?
Yeah, he was in his underwear. It was like an angel coming out from the bus, and people screaming during the night. It was really, really embarrassing and fun.
So basically, the fans got what they wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
They
exactly.
Got Blanco in his underwear.
Yeah, they were so happy.
What's the first thing you really remember?
Was it 86 when Belgium won? My parents wouldn't let me see the final result because I had to go to bed. It was going to be too late. And I told my mom, if she wins, Sandra Kim, with J'aime la vie. If she wins, you have to put a note in my room that I can see when I wake up.
Yeah.
And I woke up in the morning and there was a note in my room. So the one time that Belgium won, I didn't see.
So Belgium is overdue a win now, right?
Yes, please.
Felix, what's your one of your favorite Eurovision memories?
Well, I mean, 86 is a very fond memory because that's the first year that Iceland competed. And we were, you know, we were going to win. We had the best act ever, but we ended up in 16th place and the nation has never really recovered from that. But that's another story. No, I think my first memory is ABBA, actually. In 1974, I was 7 years old and I remember that very vividly. It was really, you know, they were the thing.
Yeah.
And you know, being of the Nordic family, you really felt that, you know, there was something very special happening there.
Yeah. Mary-Angela, your kind of favorite Eurovision memory?
I would say 2011 when Rai got back into Eurovision. That's my most vivid and lovely memory.
The best memory I have from Eurovision Song Contest was Agnieszka Shahini in 2004. That I think, if my memory serves me right, she was number 7. Like she went to the final and she got 7th place. And I also think that she was extremely famous for, let's say, my generation. I'm 30 years old now, but when she ran in 2004, I was 12. But I hope that this year with the Kilmendy family will stand out even more because I'm also HOD as a role.
It was the first year that Albania were in Eurovision 2004. It was a big year.
It was extremely special. The year was extremely special. Agnieszka Shahini, she did a great performance. And she was also well known amongst Albanians in general because the show that she won to participate was just very well known. So I think all the elements were there. And she has a great, great vocals. My mission as head of delegation, and this may come out a bit arrogant, but I think the point of participating in a competition is to win. So if you're not winning, then you're not doing something right. So my aim is to win. I want to win because this would put Albania on the map forever. So it would be something huge for the country. So,
and it is for a smaller delegation and a smaller country, what does Eurovision mean to your country?
I think for this, Eurovision means a lot of different things to a lot of different countries. For Albanians in particular, it's just a great way for us to participate in the wider European community in a huge festival in art. I think it's something that the country definitely needs, and there's a lot of hunger in the country for anyone to participate. And we definitely lack role models in art, in music, that can show that, you know, Albanians can do important things worldwide. And I think the Eurovision Song Contest should be that. And that's why we need to keep investing more and more time, more and more money into this contest.
Saying to Birgit and Felix, Italy do quite well, don't they, every year?
Oh, they're amazing.
Yeah, we're jealous.
Yes, very jealous.
Guys, thank you so much for chatting to me. I really appreciate you giving us an insight into being heads of delegation. To Birgit from Belgium, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mario, thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
To Felix from Iceland.
Tak, Felix, tak.
And to Mary-Angela from Italy.
Thank you very much. Ciao.
To get the latest episode as soon as it drops, remember to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
So thank you to Albania, to Iceland, to Italy and to Belgium, hopefully giving you a little window into what it is like for those countries at Eurovision. It does sound like a challenging job, doesn't it? Managing everybody, adapting to things that change at the last minute. And as you heard there, for Mary-Angela from Italy, she had to manage last year, not one, but two megastars in Mahmoud and Blanco. This year, she's got one megastar to cope with because Marco Mengoni, he is a global star. And Felix, he had to be there when COVID took over and prevented Dathri Freya from competing in that grand final live in Rotterdam. You have to think on your feet, as they say. Now, in the case of Spain, it's slightly different for them because they have two heads of delegation. It's a joint role, and after Chanel's success last year, there are high hopes from those joint heads of delegation. It's Anna and Eva.
I am Anna, head of delegation since 2017.
I'm Eva, I'm the new head of delegation since last year, And I'm really happy with this position because it's an opportunity for me to share values and to meet people are learning to the other countries.
We know how big Eurovision is in Spain. And last year, something changed, didn't it? Because you had Chanel. What did it feel like when Chanel did what she did?
Last year, Chanel became, because we create our pre-selection party, because for the first time, the presidency of the company decided we have to change our participation in Eurovision, and they decide we will do whatever is necessary to open the way for a better results. So we had an agreement with Benidorm to have the Benidorm Fest as our pre-selection, and also as a festival to boost the musical industry in Spain. So that was the beginning, and that made possible that we find some incredible artists as Chanel.
For me, Benidorm Fest is a dream come true because I think it's necessary in my country, a platform to export the Spanish talent, because in Spain there are a lot of composers, artists, scenographers, artistic director, a lot of talent, and we need this platform to show to the world the things that we can do in our countries. And it's an opportunity to have a national selection.
Do you feel that Spain has a new energy with Eurovision?
I think that people love Eurovision. It's very easy to fall in love with Eurovision Song Contest if you love the music and you love the culture. I think it's very traditional in Spain. When I was younger, I remember when I was a child, I always saw the festival with my parents, with my grandparents, with friends, and it's a place to share.
The energy has changed completely.
Are you excited about Blanca this year, Blanca Paloma?
Yes, because I think it's an authentic proposal with new sounds, but relation with the flamenco is, but with introduce new sounds for this style of music. I think that a great proposal in Eurovision Song Contest must to be this fillers, authentic, iconic, a powerful voice. I think that Blanca is a powerful woman too.
And it's a long time since Spain won, isn't it? 1969, I think.
54 years, yes. Maybe this year is the year. Yeah, Spain needs a winner, but Spain want to win. We can do it.
We want to win, but if it's not happened this year, I think in the short term we can accomplish that dream.
Would you say a little message about, in Spanish, what does it mean for you to be part of Eurovision?
Ilusión, compartir y disfrutar de la música.
Una experiencia que te llena mucho profesional y personalmente y que te mete en un mundo realmente que te das cuenta que la música y la industria musical tiene mucho camino por delante.
If you are a Spanish fan of Eurovision, we are going to be in Spain very soon for you. So that is coming in the next couple of weeks. Being at this heads of delegation meeting, it's a little like a school reunion, I guess. It's very harmonious. Lots of friends catching up from different countries who haven't seen each other for a good year or so. One delegation, though, flew in directly from their national final. It was Sweden, because it's been an interesting few days. At the time of recording, Loreen just won at Melodifestivalen. So Sweden is going to be bringing an existing Eurovision champion to Liverpool. Does that change things? So I'm joined now by somebody who's had maybe one of the busiest weeks of her whole year. It's Lotta, the head of delegation for Sweden. You've been on a whirlwind, haven't you? Because it's just a few days since the Melfest final.
Yes, it's like 2 days since we left Sweden and we had our final in Stockholm.
Have you slept?
We slept 2 hours that night and then we traveled the whole day, and it's been busy days here, but today's better day.
How long have you been head of delegation for Sweden now?
It's my third year I worked with the Melody Festival for 10 years, first like a creative director, and now the past years I've been head of the creative directors. I'm taking care of responsibility for all the 28 competing numbers and also the interval acts. So I'm like the producer for the show producer for them.
What's it like being the head of delegation for a country that consistently does well at Eurovision?
It's great. That's all I can say. It's great. I mean, it's great that we are in the top, but we're also very humble about that, and we work hard, and we have a great creative team that is working to get us here. So,
when you went to Turin and you went with an artist like Cornelia, she knows how to perform, doesn't she? Does it make your job easier when the artist is experienced?
Yes, of course. It feels so you are safe with the artist. You know that she's going to deliver anyhow, but it's more about the number than, you know, about the light, about the cameras, about the clips, all these things. It's more stressful than the artist. So yes, it's great to have an experienced artist with us.
How are you preparing this year when you are taking someone like Loreen, who is probably going to be the most famous contestant out of the 37 countries? So already you are going with somebody who is so well known. How are you going to manage that?
We just found out that she was a winner. It was 2 days ago, but we're going to sit down with the team tomorrow and prepare as much as we can for it. And but it's also great because she knows she's done this before. It's Eurovision is a complex and big and enormous thing, and that is great that she's been through this once before. So,
do you think that it will make your job easier?
That she has experience with it, yes, of course, I think that. But also, I think it's going to be a lot of other activities because she is famous and she has been here before.
Yeah, people will want to talk to her. People will want to get her involved. It's going to be a big, long list of things to do. You're not going to get much sleep, I guess.
No, I think it's going to be quite hectic, but we also like this, you know, and we love Eurovision.
Were you a fan of Eurovision before you got involved with Melodifestivalen and Eurovision?
Of course. I'm a dancer in the background, so I've been like, you know, looking at all those shows for many years in different ways, so yes.
Would we have ever seen you on stage?
Not on Eurovision, but on Melody Festival, and yes.
So you were there, like, you've done it, you've gone from literally the stage to behind the scenes.
Yes, exactly like that. When I was in the Melody Festival, and it was like 2002 or 2003, I think, so.
For people who live in Sweden, what does Melody Festival mean to them?
We talk about it's like a tradition, you know, you have Christmas, you have birthdays, and then you have Melody Festival. It's like a big tradition in Sweden. And we have a lot of viewers, and I think it's a big party in Sweden, and they're looking forward to it when it's all snowy and winter and grey, and they look forward to our party, like we call it, the party for everybody.
What are you going to be doing between now and returning to Liverpool? Like, what work will go into getting ready for Loreen's performance?
Oh, first we're going to have a meeting tomorrow with the artists, and then I will have a meeting with the creative team, that is the greatest team, and we'll start working on the number, how we adapt it to this stage, and then work with Loreen for create the number as best as we can. I think when we have our number, that it's like, this is what we want to have, then we bring it also to Eurovision, but then you have to adapt it, of course, and it can be a challenge.
Lotta, have a safe journey back to Stockholm. Busy few months for you, and we'll see you back in Liverpool.
Oh, thank you, and thanks talking to you.
Big thank you to Lotta. She's the head of delegation for Sweden. We will see if and how they can replicate Loreen's Melodifestivalen staging in Liverpool at the Eurovision Song Contest. All the delegations are already talking through their concepts. And if you listened to the first season of the podcast, You might remember Tuan. So he was the man with the rules who decides the running order and tells you what you can and can't do on stage. Famously, no water. It's not allowed unless you're a constructor from Serbia and you are allowed a tiny little bit in a bowl. Maybe we'll get him on soon. What do you reckon? I think he'd be good to hear from, wouldn't he? I hope you've enjoyed getting behind the scenes today. That is it from Liverpool for the time being. We'll be back in this wonderful city very soon. But it is the pre-parties next. Lots of acts performing all around Europe. And until next time, Talame.
United by music.